The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute, and of course, I typically am here with my colleague Roy Saunderson, but he's unable to join us today as he's working with one of our many clients out on the road. That said, I am delighted today we have a very special guest. Her name is Sarah Canaday, author of You, According to Them, Uncovering the Blind Spots That Impact Your Reputation and Your Career. Sarah and I should have met many years ago at one of the many conferences we've all been to at the same time, but we've been very good friends on Twitter and had many opportunities to connect. She's a rare blend of analytical entrepreneur and perceptive warmth. She has a unique gift for helping high-potential professionals achieve their best, and as Sarah climbed the ladder of corporate America, she repeatedly observed a surprising phenomenon. The most successful people weren't necessarily the ones with the highest IQ or the best job skills. She recognized that instead of the career advancement, was much more closely linked with how people applied their knowledge and talents and their capacity to collaborate, communicate, and influence others. Of course, she's a speaker, a consultant, a coach, an author, and an owner of her rapidly growing firm, Sarah Canaday & Associates. This venue has given her the opportunity to mentor and support thousands of people in diverse situations, inspiring many of them to move from insight to action with dramatic career results. And Sarah, I am grateful you're here.
Well, I am happy to be here, Max.
Well, thank you. It's you know, I often talk to people about blind spots, but I refer to them as a story that I first realized that I had blind spots when I realized how bald I was. And everyone was telling me it's not that bad, particularly my wife, you know. She'd say, honey, you know, it's not that bad. And I say, and then one day I saw a picture of the back of my head.
Yeah.
And I said, honey, how come you never told me that was there?
Right. Well,
like, and no one wants to know, right?
Right. Exactly. Perfect lead-in. Why didn't you tell me? And that, I think we all walk around saying that at some point or another in either our personal or certainly our professional lives.
Yeah, why is that? What's going on?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, very early on as leaders, mentors, you know, we were trained or conditioned to give feedback based on metrics and whether or not mm-hmm. you were meeting certain goals or making the grade, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And blind spots are a little bit different. They're more nuanced, and I think that people hesitate because it feels like you're revealing something about the person's character or personality. But but really, in fact, you would be giving them a gift by sharing with them what their blind spots are. You know, they can't see it themselves, and so they walk around wondering why they're not getting promoted, selected to present at an executive, you know, review or being sent out to represent the company. And yet they're very well-intentioned, well-meaning, and very sharp individuals, but they just have these subtleties that nobody's been willing to tell them about.
Gosh, it's a hard deal, isn't it? Because, and I love what you just said, that it's easier to talk about the measurement aspect, but that leads me to another question, and we haven't even talked about the title yet, which I love, and we're going to ask, and we're going to talk about that too.
Okay.
But I do want to hit this before I lose it, and that is your idea. You know, we often give feedback based on the measurements, but if people are hitting their numbers, we kind of let everything else kind of go. Don't we? For lack of a better word, it's why be uncomfortable with this stuff. If they're hitting their numbers, move on.
Right. Although I will say that all too often I have seen that letting go eventually catch up and cause sort of undue amount of stress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because eventually the productivity, the numbers, the sales targets stop outweighing the other ramifications of not addressing some of the other issues that people may have going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we've all worked with people we don't trust, right? Where does that come from, and how does that start? I love the title of your book, You According to Them. Why this title? And frankly, why did you write the book? Because I realize, you know, as we led that up in the bio here a little bit, you saw what was going on, but maybe if you could give us some more detail about why this message.
Well, I would say the seeds of this book started very early on, as you
mm-hmm.
said. Myself having, you know, come up through the corporate ladder, not only did I see this phenomenon of you know, it was the way people brought their skills to the table, their ability to interact, build relationships, and influence important, but what got to me is that I had to sit at a table with colleagues, and we had to decide who's going to be that person that'll either get the promotion or
mm-hmm.
that will get the exposure. And I had to hear things like, well, you know, Joe's very sharp, knows his stuff inside and out, but, you know, he's kind of a loose cannon. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, Sue here is phenomenal and has read up on industry trends, can see around the corner, but, you know, sometimes she gets a little over-enthusiastic in front of a group of executives. And it just confounded me that these people would be passed over and nobody was willing to tell them.
Mm.
And there's some really common blind spots, I think, once you reach a certain level. And so that's where this came from. I felt like I had been carrying this book inside of me for a while, where I wanted to say, okay, if nobody's willing to tell you, I am. And let me tell you some of the, you know, most basic or the most prevalent blind spots that I think very career-oriented, goal-oriented professionals have.
Mm-hmm. Boy, where do these things come from? Like, why is it so hard to see for ourselves what's going on, but for others it's so easy?
Well, you know, I think that we process everything through our own filters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have a particular intention in our message or in our approach, and we assume that others are going to receive our message and our approach or our style as we intended it, but
yes,
we're not conscious of it. You know, we have to be almost hyper vigilant about how might somebody perceive my message and how I'm approaching them, whether them as individual or a group. And we just don't seem to do that. We sort of take it for granted. Well, if I intend it this way, then surely that's how they're going to perceive it.
Right, right. And yet, when you mention that, you know, like we have to think about how other people might perceive this. I find that when I start to think like that, it at times actually, I almost a blockage of thought. Like I don't even dare put something on Twitter if I'm worried about, you know, how it might be perceived. So I'm very, very careful about how I tweet or how I share something in social media or, you know, what we talk about to make sure that I'm trying not to offend someone. But it's funny how sometimes even when you do put something out there and someone replies to it, like you could tell they read it in a different way.
Right. Because they're
processing. We just don't have a different perception, don't we?
Exactly. They have their own filters, their own belief system. And what got them from A to D is very different than what got you from A to D in that same sentence or 140 characters. It's just processed completely different. But yes, definitely. So, you know, that's sort of the why I wrote the book. At a more sort of specific level, you know, I also think that there are many people out there that don't feel they can avail themselves of an executive coach, a leadership consultant. And so this is my way of saying, here, you know, do it yourself. Read these scenarios and see if anything resonates with you. And, you know, certainly you're going to find others in the book, but brace yourself. You might find yourself. And if so, you know, I want to help you. And trust me, there are aspects of myself in the book, having spent years in corporate. So I did not go out without my own blind spots. So, you know, that was the other reason I wrote the book. And in terms of the title, well, you know, that was probably twofold. One was, I know that on a very surface level or an immediate level, people want it to be about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew the you might sort of capture somebody's attention. Mm-hmm. And according to them is, you know, people are intrigued. Oh, what do they think about me?
Right.
You know, that's at a very surface level. But I think on a really deep level, what I have found is that people are hungry for feedback.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know how they can move from A to B or, you know, transition from where they are to where they want to be or advice on what might be stopping them. So that was the reason for the title. And really, if you think about it, you, according to them, could be, we assume it's the individual. I walk into companies every day, big companies, and I'm not there, for example, you know, Dell's here in Austin. I'm not there to go work with Dell and fix Dell as a whole. That just doesn't happen. Dell is made up of hundreds and thousands of individuals. So the you, according to them, really starts at the individual level. And, you know, it's Bob and Sue at a company.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it's interesting to me that a lot of people say, you know, don't care what other people think. Just do and be who you are. That's true authenticity. But I think that what you're saying is that could go too far. And I have to say I totally agree with this idea of we do have to care what other people think. Now, it doesn't have to influence everything we do, but being aware of what they think should help give us some context to our decisions.
Yes, and gosh, there's so much there. You know, I'm not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that we walk into corporate and be Stepford wives and that we not be who we are. But, you know, these are social systems, and for any big company to operate with any sort of semblance of organization and to achieve goals as a whole, we need to, you know, sort of operate under this unwritten playbook, if you will. I didn't write the playbook. You didn't write the playbook. But let's face it, it exists.
You bet.
And I say instead of fighting that notion, why don't we use it to our advantage? I mean, that became very clear to me in corporate that, you know, I may not have been able to, you know, I wasn't the best at creating Excel pivot tables, right? But, wow, you know, I could certainly put together a message that would be more influential, and I could build relationships with my colleagues so that I could gain support for an initiative that, you know, my area was working on. Those are the things that, you know, why not use it to our advantage? So the idea of caring about what others think, while it may seem counterintuitive, what that will do for you is offer you the chance to accomplish more of what you want.
Boy, that's,
right?
that's the key, isn't it? It's very counterintuitive, but I think that can't be emphasized enough.
Right. Right.
Yeah, this is actually in our best interest, because frankly, if we walk around not caring what other people think, we could just be offending people all day long, and we're not going to get very far.
No, and you know, Exactly. And you've got the renegade. You know, and I always tell people, be a renegade in your ideas and your solutions, but not in your behavior.
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to explore here, Sarah, and we're going to have to continue this conversation on the other side of a break.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk also about this concept of applied self-awareness. We've all heard what the self-awareness is, but what is the applied part of it? And then I know you also have these really cool perception gaps that you've labeled in many different ways. And as you mentioned, if someone was to read the book, which I highly recommend our listeners doing, they might see themselves in different aspects of the book or in different places. I certainly did for myself. So when we come back, let's talk about some of those, all right?
Excellent.
Excellent. For Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, although he can't be here today, and our guest, Sarah Kanaday, you're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned because we'll be right back.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown with our guest today, Sarah Kanaday, author of You According to Them. Sarah, we were talking just before the break all about this concept of applied self-awareness. Now, we would talk about it further in this piece, rather. Self-awareness we're aware of, but what's the applied component?
Well, the applied, you know, self-awareness is when you know, when you have uncovered a blind spot, right? Either somebody has told you or you've been conscientious enough to uncover some nuances or some things that, you know, you may have an opportunity to adjust, or you're wired a certain way, so you have a propensity to let stress impact your decision-making, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to know and be self-aware. It's another thing to do something about it.
Boy,
and that's where applied self-awareness comes from.
So it's one thing to know I have a bald spot, another thing to shave my head.
Exactly. So, you know, I think, you know, that's the other side of the coin here is, you know, what do we do with the information once it's revealed to us or, you know, we've been honest enough with ourselves? That's the applied self-awareness where we take what we know and we adjust our behavior to suit others or to suit the circumstance.
And so on that note, I think that you've found or identified, at least for me, several helpful ways of thinking about our perception gaps or the way we might be thinking something and how it might be perceived to someone else. There's several of these, and I know we won't be able to get through all of them today, but if we could just talk about at least a few of them and maybe some of your favorites as well. But one of my really liked was like you called it don't fence me in. Can you give me an example of what this means and maybe how some of our listeners might be feeling, this don't fence me in syndrome, if you will, and what we should be doing.
Sure. So I think this is probably one of the most common, and it goes back to what we talked about. In corporate, in huge organizations, people feel or can feel stifled by protocol, procedures, red tape, call it what you will. And, you know, what's interesting is the way I outlined this archetype, if you want to call it, in a book, is that this is a person that's usually very sharp, very successful, right? They're the top salesperson. They have no problem achieving metrics and reaching their goals. But they have this part of them that says, well, you know, as long as I do my work and I'm turning in my numbers, and in fact I'm exceeding my numbers, then really that's all that should matter. I shouldn't have to attend company picnics, for example, after hours, because, you know, that infringes on my personal time and I don't want that. Or, you know, so I'm a little late in turning in my expenses, even though they're supposed to be in, you know, 7 days after a trip. And by the way, you know, I kind of, on behalf of the rest of the group, want to point out any sort of what I consider, you know, less than fair guidelines or procedures. I want to maybe be the advocate on behalf of the rest of the group. So again, very, very sharp people. They feel that their performance should speak for itself, that these other requirements really, you know, shouldn't necessarily impact their success or the way they're viewed. And that's really the kind of person that I'm talking about. And the reasons for those are varied, right? So I have coached several people with this particular blind spot, and I'm always very interested to find out where it comes from. And many times I think these are the individuals that throughout their lives felt that Big Brother, whether that be the school system, whether that be their parents, any authority figure, was trying to squelch who they were and what they're about. And so they have this constant tension and almost internal fight with authority. And it carries over into anything they do. And again, it's the person that sort of, instead of, you know, plays the game to win, fights the rules. And so it doesn't necessarily always come from a place of conceit or bravado. I'm top sales, so those rules shouldn't apply to me. That's not necessarily where it comes from. There's a much deeper issue at hand, if you will.
Yeah, and it's, so it's hard to predict maybe where it came from, but knowing that you have it is key.
It is key.
And you said it, you shared a really compelling story in the book about this, you know, someone who did come across pretty tough. And so even though they were climbing the ladder very quickly in many, many different types of places, that's the problem. It was just so many places because hit the numbers but would plateau in terms of behavior being almost too tough, right? Too much bravado, too uncooperative or rebellious, if you will.
Well, I think what happened is supervisors who are initially very attracted to the performance of this individual soon became, you know, a little bit daunted by the inordinate amount of time they'd have to spend on the other issues. And so this person does generally go from job to job. And, you know, part of it is that they either they're asked to leave kindly or they self-select out because they just don't want – they feel the pressure coming down to sort of, you know, read the playbook, and they don't want to. So they take their performance elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's and so when you work with someone like this and they start to see that this is part of their deal, what do you say to them? What do you say to them to, so that they don't feel like, you know, I'm being a conformist here? They can still have their identity, or like we said before, it doesn't matter that I mean, it doesn't matter what other people say, but it doesn't mean that you have to be squelched in your own identity either.
That's correct. So oftentimes what I'll do is I'll ask them, what makes them so successful in sales or in, you know, getting a team to meet performance goals? What are some of the same tactics and strategies they use to reach their performance targets? And many a time these are individual performance targets, but, you know, they begin to tell me things like, well, you have to really get to know your client and you have to understand what their pain points are and what their challenges are. And you have to, you know, try to fit your solutions with their pain points and challenges. And so I try to get them to give me, you know, quite a bit of their own sense of strategy. And I say, well, why don't we look at that from this standpoint? Why don't we look at this from what's the company you're working for? What keeps them up at night? What are some of their challenges? Mm-hmm. What are some of the pain points? And why might they be asking you to attend a company picnic after hours? Is it just because they don't want to infringe on your time? What might be behind that? Mm-hmm. So I try to get them to shift their thinking a little bit and use the same strategies they use with their customers or with their own, you know, performance, and turn it and use it with regard to what the company is trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Oh,
and
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. There are certain people, and I've had as many people who, for whatever reason, it is too uncomfortable. It is just not who they are to line up with a big corporate culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every industry is different. And to those people, I say, great. If you're not wired to work in this way, then we need to look at entrepreneurship for you.
Right. And it's just
and
different things for different people.
Exactly. Exactly.
And just trying to help them find happiness wherever they're supposed to be.
Exactly. Right.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, I like this other one as well. Now, this is one that's interesting, but you call it the intellectual snob. Intelligent and well-qualified or condescending and elitist. And my question with this one is, how or where would you begin to give someone feedback on this? What if someone's listening today and they have someone in their office, maybe it's them, but they feel like, ah, shoot, you know, this intellectual snob thing showing up. They are well-qualified. They really are smart. But let's be honest, it does come across as condescending sometimes or extremely elitist. How would they give someone feedback like that?
Well, I think really, the advice I would give for this particular issue or area is probably the same I would give for any of these blind spots that are kind of, and again, they're a little bit touchy and hard to address.
They are, yeah.
And so I get asked this all the time in my speaking engagements. People are looking at this from not only their standpoint, but those that follow them, and how can they address some of these issues. And I always say to them, you know, start with in your, you know, individual development planning phase, in your one-on-one meetings, anytime you get to the point where you're talking about how they're doing, where they want to develop, you know, ask them a question. How is it that you want to be perceived by others? What kinds of things would you like them to say about you or what it's like to work with you? What do you see for yourself moving forward? And you let them answer those questions. And then you ask them, what do you think might stop you from getting there or being perceived the way you want to be perceived?
So let them identify it themselves.
Let them identify it. Now, interestingly enough, I would say half, maybe 60% of the time, people have some inkling of what might be causing a disconnect in how they want to be perceived versus how they are being perceived.
Okay.
And they may not know how to, you know, how to explain it or exactly how to pinpoint it, but they just, they're somewhere in the vicinity. Okay, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And so as a leader, you can then take that information, and your question then is after they've identified, you say, great, are you open to hearing what I think might be keeping you from being perceived accurately or the way you intend.
So this is where it gets, you know, pretty sensitive.
It does. That's a pivotal question. But here's the thing. If you ask them permission, again, I've never heard anybody say no.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear what you have to say about what you think stops me from getting where I am to where I want to be or being perceived accurately. But they have given you permission, so their defenses are down. It's almost on a subconscious level that this happens. And
yeah,
they're much more open to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, it's good. Sarah, this is the tough stuff. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, these are honest conversations that really benefit people in terms of their performance, the way they're going, their careers, which is why this is such an important conversation.
Right. Right.
We have to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about no crying in baseball. Does that sound
okay?
All right?
Alrighty.
I want to talk about no crying in baseball. And the other one I really want to talk about today is are there some common blind spots that you see around, or is it just, you know, is it spread across the spectrum? Or is there, you know, do leaders demonstrate a certain type of blind spot that you think is more prevalent in a leader or not? And we'll talk about that after the break.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with our guest today, Sarah Canaday, talking about uncovering the blind spots that impact your reputation and your career. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown. We'll be right back.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and Max Brown. And, of course, our guest today, Sarah Canaday, author of You According to Them. Sarah, just before the break, we were talking about this concept you talk about called no crying in baseball, which I just love. And then I want to follow up with a question around leadership and whether you find, you know, one type of blind spot that's pretty common among leaders or not, or are they just kind
okay.
of all spread out? But let's start with crying in baseball. No crying in baseball.
Well, it's taken from the famous movie, I think, with Rosie O'Donnell and Tom Hanks. We can all relate to this. And really, this is the person who's, again, highly intelligent, technically inclined, but they aren't very emotive at work, and they resist the idea of perhaps building emotional connections at work.
Okay.
And so what happens is, you know, others could perceive them as being aloof,
mm-hmm.
uncaring, or if they're in a leadership position, not needing others' advice or not seeking out others' advice, because they're usually very independent. And they, you know, again, belief system has a lot to do with this. When you uncover that these people really have no intention of coming across aloof,
mm-hmm.
or like they don't care, but they have, you know, been conditioned, or they have tapes that say, you know, you leave your problems at the door,
mm-hmm.
or you leave your emotions at the door, or who you are as a person at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And work is work. And people will see one side of my personality, and that's really, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because this is really related to a person's ability to have emotional intelligence. Wouldn't you agree?
I do. I really do. So this is where things like empathy come in,
mm-hmm.
and social awareness, you know, really being in tune and picking up on undercurrents, either, you know, from a culture of a company or from a team or, you know, attending meetings. That's really where that comes from, is this idea of, you know, being aware and being in tune with others.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. What do you say to people who want to develop a better in tune with others skill set, if you will? I mean, how do you help them even feel like that's in their best interest? Because for me, I really enjoyed this read from the idea that, gosh, if I come across this way, right, and I feel like being emotional is a vulnerability and a weakness, I could actually be eliminating or wiping out a lot of connections with potential, not only with people around me, but the employees I might be working with, and I fail to inspire, right?
That's correct. So a couple of things here. Again, you know, might sound counterintuitive,
mm-hmm.
but the more of yourself you're able to reveal, or this idea of transparency, really mm-hmm. what that allows is for other people to be able to make some sort of connection with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes one step further. If they can feel like they can connect with you, then they feel like they can relate to you, and more importantly, that you can relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
If those mm-hmm. two things are in place, your ability to influence are much larger, or you have a much bigger chance than if the person does not feel that you could relate to them or that they have anything in common with you.
Yep.
So I think, you know, what I try to illuminate for folks who are sort of in this area, and there's a lot of different layers here. You know, some people, you know, it's not that they don't feel like emotion is, you know, who they are, they have to leave at the door, but perhaps it feels inefficient to them to build relationships, right?
Mm.
They have a to-do list. They want to get into work. And, you know, chit-chatting in the coffee room to them seems unproductive.
Yeah, yeah.
It just does, and they don't get it. And they think, frankly, I wouldn't assume that anybody really cares about me. That's the really interesting one I hear a lot.
Hmm.
I just assume that people don't really have an interest. Do they really mm-hmm. have an interest in me and my kids? Mm-hmm. I mean, that just seems disingenuous.
Yeah, so
and
don't,
I guess,
don't blow smoke up, you know, like,
yeah,
just don't
so
mess with me, right?
They hesitate. They hesitate to then ask those questions. And I say, you know, it's got to start somewhere. Even if that seems rote, how are you? How are your kids doing? If you start, the conversation will eventually lead somewhere where both of you can plug in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the rapport building starts. And that's where relationship building starts over time. Right? So I also have to get people to understand that, you know, you may be very transactional because that seems very efficient to you, but the idea of building relationships will be just as productive, if not more, over time, because you will have more influence on that person's behavior, performance, and ultimately results. So there's a domino effect here. And the other thing I get them to try to see is that if they are going into the office, doing their work, staying to themselves, by nature what happens is if we don't share things about ourselves, people will fill in the blanks for us.
Boy, good point.
And so, yes, and so I want them to understand that they should take ownership of how they're perceived and manage that perception more closely. And that's one way to do it.
Well, and to that end, I really appreciate the idea that you wrote about in the book, that you said, remember, work performance isn't just graded on the tangibles, because, well, we all measure those, and they're easy to see, and yeah, we might be getting great results in that category. There's also these intangibles, and that it's the combination of both that personify who we are and our work performance, and we need to succeed at both.
Absolutely. I mean, in its simplest terms, where I think people get it, is you look at the number of initiatives, people who are going to angel investors for their latest business, service idea. It's the ones who have the ability to influence and the way they get their message across that's going to carry that initiative through, that's going to get the funding and the capital needed for their business. It could be the best business idea ever, but if it's not vetted with enthusiasm, passion, and with credibility, then it could very well be lost and sit on the table.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point. A lot around all of this. Let's come back to that a question I had earlier about the leadership component here. Is there an archetype or a blind spot that you find is very common among leaders, or are they kind of spread all out?
You know, I think because I work with a lot of high potential groups, these are the people that are being groomed. They may already be in a manager position, but they're really being groomed for even top management positions. I really do see probably two really common themes. And again, these are the people that they're there. They're almost there.
Yeah.
And they just, they just need to just go one more step. And it's two things. The first is that, and this relates to a chapter in my book, it's called the perpetual doer syndrome, right? And so it's the person who, if described by others, they would say, oh, yeah, you need something done, you give it to Bob. You need something that somebody you can count on, he's your guy. Again, he has a to-do list, very organized, gets everything done, always meets his performance metrics, always on time with his reports. And yet, when it's time to look at Bob for more of an executive or higher level leader, people have a hard time picturing him in that role. Because he's a doer, perhaps, and not a driver. And so I'm always saying to some of my clients, we need to shift you from being seen as a doer to a driver. Instead of being able to execute strategy, I want you to drive strategy. So they're so caught up, they function on overdrive so much of the time that they don't have time for the higher level visioning type pieces. Or they don't have time to build thought leadership around where their industry might be going. How can I see around the corner? How can I bring my ideas of the implication of what's happening in the industry forward? Because they're so busy doing. And so those are the people that I think that's a very common trap that happens.
Well, that's a good one to be aware of.
Right. And one that's very much related to that is this idea of, and it's really parallel, the same person is not necessarily seen as having executive presence, right, or leadership presence, call it what you will. But, again, they're identified as the person that gets it done, but they don't necessarily command a room when they walk in. Mm-hmm. They don't have the aura about them. They perhaps, when they're downloading some information in a meeting, they don't necessarily carry the confidence, the conviction behind what they're doing, and they fall short of having, you know, top influencing skills.
Yep.
So, you know, and executive presence has many layers. I mean, it could literally be the way they're presenting themselves, what I call their visual resume, down to how they're dressed, how they use their hands, their facial expressions, how well-groomed they are,
mm-hmm.
including things, very subtle things. You know, executives are very measured in their communication. They don't talk too much, but they know sort of exactly when to contribute. They know sort of when it's time to push an idea versus hold back.
Mm-hmm.
These are the very subtle things that I think move you from sort of a mid-level to a higher-level leader.
Sarah, I appreciate this conversation. We have to take another break.
Okay.
And we'll have one last segment where we can try to wrap this all up and put it all together. It always goes so fast, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
When we come back, I hope we can talk just a little bit around what have you learned since writing the book and what could we do as a result of this conversation. So when we come back, we'll ask those questions to Sarah. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Radio. We're going to take a last few minutes with Sarah Canaday today, talking about those blind spots. And Sarah, the big question I have for you is, as a result of writing the book, have you learned anything new, or has there been anything that's come out of it that's kind of surprised you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot that went into writing the book, and I think maybe surprise isn't the word, but what I didn't realize would be so gratifying about writing the book is that leaders have actually come to me and said that they have been able to use these, what I call syndromes in the book, the blind spot syndromes, and their related fixes, right? Because I really wanted to give people sort of an action plan or fast fixes for these syndromes in the book, but that leaders have actually been able to use them with their followers, with mm-hmm. the people that they're trying to coach and grow. And so I have to admit, my intent was to help individuals, right? Help themselves,
mm-hmm.
More of a self you know, paced guide for individuals. What I didn't realize is that a lot of leaders are actually using this as a tool for their coaching sessions. So
that's great.
Yeah,
that is great. So on that note, if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about this book, where should they go?
Well, the book is available on Amazon, and if they want to get a hold of me, my website is www.sarahcanaday.com, and I will just say that Sarah is no H, and Canaday is just like Canada, but with a Y at the end. And, of course, I'm on Twitter, at Sarah Canaday. So any of those avenues would be great.
I love it. I'm grateful that you were on our show today. If there's one last thing you would want people to remember as a result of this conversation, what would it be?
That it's never too late, first of all, to look at potential blind spots. I myself am always learning about things, and that, you know, there is a way to sort of move and take more of a ownership, if you will, on how you want to be perceived and manage those perceptions more closely so they align with who you are and how you want others to see you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you were able to be on the show today. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
It's been a fun conversation. And for our listeners, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for every week tuning in. This show is growing so fast, and we're so excited about what's going on. Of course, we have a wonderful library at Rideau's Real Recognition Radio Library at Rideau.com, and you can see more there as well. That's at Rideau.com. You can find me on Twitter at SMaxBrown, at SMaxBrown, and my colleague Roy Saunderson on Twitter as well. For more information about the Rideau's Recognition Management Institute, please visit us at Rideau. And until next time, this is Max Brown reminding you to keep it real. We'll see you again next time. Thanks.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.